We're going to take a dive into the paranormal side with the para investigators. It's an incredible story. John D'Souza with us in a moment as we chat about some true tales and concepts of supernaturally gifted investigators. Looking forward to this, so just stand by. Looking forward to this. John D'Souza with us. John D'Souza has researched and collected experiences on paranormal and spiritual topics for more than two decades. He was an attorney and investigating official of the U.S. government, maintained a top secret security clearance at one of the three-letter agencies. Guess what that is? He labored in the fields of the global war on terrorism and the war on drugs. He's currently an author, chief editor at Tama Publishing. Change of career, John, but I bet you enjoyed this, don't you?
Absolutely, George. Let me tell you what an honor it is for me to be on with you and the Coast to Coast audience. And yes, it's a wonderful change, and it's a great, great, refreshing time to be able to get these stories out that I've collected for so long as well.
Oh, the great stories. Now, how did you, because you've got a very varied background. Can I tell people about the business card you sent me included in the book? Or do you want me to keep that confidential?
I would rather you kept that for yourself.
Okay.
One of the things I try to do is not to have, not to say to people the particular agency that I was with for such a long time. And the reason for that is that I want to preserve as much independence as
sure,
I can.
Sure, I understand. I'll respect that. Just want our audience to know I'm not hiding anything. It was John's former employer, and we'll leave it at that.
Absolutely.
Now, how did you make this kind of a change, though? I mean, this going from that to this, it's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, well, I think the universe leads you to the place where you really want to be, where you have to be, regardless. And the things you have tendencies for and the things that you have experience for, you're going to end up doing eventually, just through happenstance. And even early in my career, for some reason, I don't know if I vibrated at a different level for most people, but for some reason, people would tell me their paranormal experiences. I would come across them, and people who had problems with things they didn't understand and didn't know. I would sometimes through third parties and sometimes directly. And I've always been around a lot of law enforcement officers. I've never been a police officer myself, but I've always been around them. And they're a very select group. They're a very unique group in a lot of ways. One of the ways is that they're very physical and material based, even more than regular people are. And so when that's ripped away from them in a single experience, it tends to be extremely jarring to them. And they're in a place and a position where there's really not too many people they can talk to about these experiences. Because once that toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't get that back in. And it's a tough place to be in law enforcement and have an experience like this and to have nobody really that you can share it with.
And John, I got to tell you, law enforcement right now, I mean, they're getting slapped from all angles. And, you know, we are staunch supporters of law enforcement on this program. And, you know, fully understand and appreciate the things they have to go through. And, you know, I've always said it's unfortunate. It is so unfortunate that somebody gets shot by a police officer, gets killed by a police officer, if they're unarmed. But, you know, I come from a school where you don't argue with a police officer. You don't fight with them. You don't try to grab their gun. You just, you know, if you've done something, you know, be polite about it. And you know what? I think 99 out of 100 times, you're going to be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. We do need to support law enforcement as much as possible in almost every situation. I was really surprised recently when I'm sure you may have heard about it or already discussed it even, about the three officers, I think a couple of them were officers and one of them was an EMT responder who actually had the experience and actually talked about it, where they were just passing by an area where they had a general idea that an emergency had happened, and they heard clearly a woman's voice calling out to them, and telling them, please help me, please
Oh, this
help
is the
me.
one with the baby in the back.
Yes,
Yeah, upside down.
exactly. It was stunning to me. The experience was stunning to me. And there was a baby inside an upside down car under the water, and the baby was still okay.
Amazing. Just with, you know, head right above the water level.
Exactly.
And freezing. It was cold. But, you know, I thought for a moment when I had that story, John, a couple of weeks ago, I thought, you know, maybe the mother was still alive and she wanted her baby saved and she just kept saying, help me, help, help.
Right.
But I don't think that was it. They heard something else from the other side.
Yeah. And that story, what happened was amazing to me for a couple of reasons. One was because, of course, it was a shared supernatural experience of several individuals. It wasn't just one person hearing that voice saying, please help me, help me. It was, I believe it was two or three individuals that all that heard the same voice. So it was a shared paranormal experience between, and then the other thing that shocked me about it was that they actually stepped forward and said what happened. That's something that you don't see very often in law enforcement because of the factors that I just said. It's very tough for law enforcement to talk about when they're taken out of their comfort zone and when something that's non-material, something supernatural happens to them. It's something that they don't take to very easily, very often.
We're with John D'Souza. His book is called The Para Investigators. Tell me about the title, John.
The title is basically about real investigators, real world investigators who are involved in regular investigations, but something happens halfway through. Something occurs that lets them know that something non-material is going on. Para investigation is just a systematic inquiry or investigation that utilizes regular methods, but then goes into intuitive paranormal mechanisms in order to resolve crimes or mysteries. And para investigators are just, they're regular people who experience a shift. They cross through some sort of gate, some kind of gateway, and they become something else. And sometimes they're not happy about using these abilities that they didn't know they have. And sometimes their abilities are not welcome by the people that they save, because people and other people who work with them tend to be a little suspicious. They tend to be among the most suspicious people. And when something happens that, even if it benefits them, benefits victims, when something happens that can't be explained in the material world, sometimes people, they become resentful or they become suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And they can immediately go to the worst possible option. And that's what happens sometimes, I'm sorry to say, to para-investigators, because we don't yet accept investigators who use methods that are otherworldly or that are non-material. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote this book, to try to change that, try to create more tolerance for investigators with psychic abilities, with abilities to know things that other people don't know.
Well, and there's no question about it that the para-investigating world is looked at with a different eye, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, when officers are desperate, for example, over cold cases or cases where there's a kidnapping and they have no resolution whatsoever, and some psychic will just show up and volunteer to help victims, they're not happy about accepting that help. But sometimes they will. In a quiet sort of down low manner, they will accept that help. But even then, it's very difficult for them to reach out to someone that has abilities that can't be explained in the natural world.
Now, your book, The Para Investigators, has 52 stories in it. How did you go about collecting them? How'd you get them?
Well, early in my career, I was just sitting around and just started talking to an officer who seemed troubled about something. I asked him what the problem was, and he told me he'd had a strange experience where he was driving down a highway, and he was flagged down by a young man in the road that was pointing him towards one side of the highway. So he stopped his car, And he said to me he went, looked down an embankment, and there was a car there that was crashed just into the tree line, just barely, just a few feet off the highway, just enough so it was not that easy to see. He turned around to ask the young man some questions. He didn't want to touch either of the victims that were in the car. He called for first responders to come to the area to help the young ladies who were injured in the vehicle. But when he turned around, the young man was gone. There were no other cars in the area, and he didn't see what happened. He told me that's not what made him suspicious, that there was something otherworldly happening. Not that the young man disappeared, there was no trace of him. What made him suspicious was that he had a photographic memory. He had wanted to become a sketch artist. But as soon as the young man disappeared, his memory of the young man's features also started disappearing, like when you wake up from a dream and you're trying to remember the details of the dream and they just slip away from you.
Right.
He said that's how he felt. And when he first told me that, my natural reaction was to look at him and tell him that young man might have just been an angel. And when I said that, he just was startled, like I had just read his mind or revealed something that he...
Because he was thinking that too, wasn't he?
That's what I felt like. And because it was very early in my career, I didn't get follow-up details from him on the incident. But what it did was he then talked to other people, and then others came to me and recounted some paranormal experiences. And it just went from there. People were told that I was a person who was receptive to that type of message. And so over the years, I've just collected more and more of these things. But more important than the stories, I think, are the concepts that I've put together over the years as well that explain the stories and how they happen, how these things can possibly occur. Because that's what really baffles people a lot of times, especially people who are so material-based in the world that they just can't suspend that disbelief in order to take in the real details of stories like this.
John, what have you concluded about you looked at these 52 cases. Obviously, you believe them. Yes. What have you concluded about the entire package?
I've concluded over so many years of research and things coming to me over the years as far as theory, I've concluded that basically in the paranormal, there are things that are true. Like, for instance, I have put together the persistent consciousness corollary. That's what I call it. I've concluded that basically if any spiritual or paranormal subjects or beliefs have persisted in human consciousness for decades, for centuries, for eons, that persistent existence itself is the best evidence that it is real, that it truly exists, and that its existence basically is no longer controversial. It can no longer be contradicted.
No.
That's basically my overall thesis on all of these stories.
Were you always a believer like that, or did you change?
Well, I was always, there's a difference. I was always an experiencer, let's put it that way. And once you are an experiencer, I've been an experiencer of paranormal phenomena since I was a child. And so when you're an experiencer from a very young age, you don't really know how to articulate those beliefs, and you don't know how to put them into words, but you know that there's more than the material world. And I think most kids are like that before they become regimented by public education and terrible things like that. That's how I think most kids think anyway. But then that just kind of gets beaten out of them at a certain age. But yes, I did go from being an experiencer to in later years becoming a believer and being able to articulate those beliefs in various areas.
When you were putting these cases together, obviously you had even more. Were these your top 52?
No. But these were the top, and only half of them are stories. The other half are the concepts behind the stories. So these are not the top, but in this in the area of people being investigators, being officers, being people in a desperate search for truth. These were the top stories in that area. I have other books that are coming out shortly that are in other areas that don't have anything to do with law enforcement or investigators.
But same genre?
Pretty much, yes. Yes, the same genre, basically. Stories of the paranormal, stories of paranormal experience. But the ones that are about officers tend to be very special.
Yeah.
And the reason is because officers, they're very stoic. They're very stoic. They're very, they don't want to appear weak to people. And they're very intent on always seeming like they're in control. No matter whether you're talking about a security guard, a private detective, whether you're talking about somebody who's part of a huge agency, a world-spanning agency, they all want to appear as if they're always in control. And that's why my stories don't give the identifying information on the officers. A lot of them are still working. A lot of them are still in their positions. And I find that the level of honesty that you get when you promise them anonymity is, I think it's a higher level. You know,
Yeah, because most people like that are afraid of ridicule. They're afraid about their jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I greatly respect the work of great scholars like Leslie Kane, who wrote about officers and pilots and government officials going on the record. You know, I greatly respect stories where writers and scholars, they want to identify these paranormal stories. We have retired generals from other countries now who are coming out publicly and who are saying, yeah, we knew all about flying objects, and we have records of them, and they give their names sometimes and their titles. And a lot of times that's because they're retired. A lot of times it's politically convenient also for them to step forward at this time. But most people don't have that luxury. They can't. They're not in a place where they can really tell the truth about what honestly happens. And in a lot of my stories, some of them, they don't end in a positive way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I noticed that about a few of them, but
yeah.
I always thought that as I went into it, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
When we come back from the break, John, I want you to tell us about some of these incredible stories. You've looked at Indigo Kids.
Yes.
Someone dying by a broken heart.
Yes.
And we'll get into that. Then also we'll talk more about the supernatural. Then next hour we'll open up the phone lines. I know our audience would love to chat with you about this and give us some of your thoughts. John's website, by the way, it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's there for you, and we're talking about his latest work called The Para Investigators, 52. We're not going to have time to go through all 52, but 52 True Tales and Concepts of Supernaturally Gifted Investigators. We're going to really get into this with him in a moment. It's amazing just what law enforcement and other agencies have come across, and that you don't hear a lot about it. Well, but you will on this show. So we'll come right back. Don't touch your dial right here on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest, John D'Souza, as we talk about John's work, The Para Investigators. We're going to come back in a moment to chat more with him this hour. Your calls next hour. And welcome back to Coast, John D'Souza with us, of course, The Para Investigators. Good job with this too, John. And it shows that your background, your police background, your law enforcement background surely worked when you put this book together.
Yeah, it helped a great deal having experience with a lot of the men and women who serve in this capacity and who have had these experiences. And it's very interesting when people who wear guns and badges have to go into situations where they're no longer protecting themselves from bad guys, but instead are in situations where they just don't know what to do. They just don't know how to defend themselves because they're facing something that's just completely unknown to them.
When you were putting this together, putting these various stories together, I'm going to have you pick a couple to tell us. Obviously, not all 52. One, we don't have time for it. Two, we don't want to do your book on the air. We want people to read it. So tell me some of your favorite stories.
Well, in the vein of what I was just talking about, one of the stories is called Indigo Kids. Now, the Coast to Coast audience knows what Indigo Kids are, but some of the officers that I spoke to about these experiences, they don't know these terms. They're not steeped in the paranormal, and some of them think that they invented the term Indigo Kids. It just means children who display psychic or some kind of supernatural abilities at a very young age. And here's what occurred. When the 9/11 attacks happened on the World Trade Center in the United States, there were a lot of things that occurred in the days and weeks previous that took on special significance, whereas if the attacks had never happened, they would have meant very little.
Right.
One of those things was that children, in my estimate, I would say dozens of cases across the country, came to the attention of law enforcement of children from the ages of as young as 5 years old to about 12 years old. That seemed to be the cutoff for this sort of incident. Dozens of these cases of very young children from all over the country that were suddenly being reported in to law enforcement, where kids in the days and weeks prior to the 9/11 attacks talked to babysitters, teachers, caregiver adults, and made very strange comments that at the time were just kind of disregarded as weird or strange, but nothing really serious. We had a little boy who woke up crying on a school bus. He had just taken a nap, just fell asleep, and just woke up crying about people burning up in skyscrapers because something terrible happened to the buildings. We have little boys who drew paintings or finger paints of two skyscrapers and airplanes going toward the skyscrapers, and the teacher would tell the little boy, the plane should be flying over the buildings, not you drew it too low. And the child would just say, no, these planes are going into those buildings, straight into them. And the child and the teacher would look at the child strangely, but just kind of chalk it up to just a strange, weird incident. Well, these incidents, once 9/11 happened, suddenly became highly significant, and a lot of them were reported in. So you can imagine the discomfort of a big police officer, and a lot of the big departments have heard these stories and have experienced some of these things. You can imagine the discomfort of a big strapping police officer with a gun and badge having to interrogate an 8-year-old boy about a dream that he had. Sometimes these children, they didn't have any memory of their dream or what they said to the adults of what occurred. We had one little girl who just for no particular reason, she just said to a group of adults that they shouldn't walk so close to tall buildings because bad things happen in tall buildings. Mm. Rocks fall down on people's heads. And, adults will have a natural tendency to just want to give the benefit of the doubt to a child that's just maybe having a weird moment. But once this sort of thing is reported by a concerned citizen, it has to be covered by somebody. It has to be investigated. The child has to be spoken to. Then the family has to be looked at to make sure they have no connections to anything that could possibly have to do with the 9/11 incidents. And so they have to go through those motions, regardless of what they personally think. Anyway, this one of the more interesting incidents was I think it was an 8-year-old boy who who was interviewed very gently by a very sensitive task force member who told the story later. And he recounted the story as at first the little boy just didn't remember what was in his dream. And he said it was, but then as he gently, went through the event with the little boy finally remembered. And The little boy said, "I just had a dream that I told the adults about, and it was just that there was a room, a big room, with one table and a phone on it, and the phone was ringing. And I was just looking for adults to answer the phone, but I was by myself in the room, and the phone ringing got louder and louder." He said it was an olden days phone, like Edison had. And the phone just got louder and louder, and he said he felt like he had to answer it. And the little boy picked up the telephone receiver and said, "Hello." And on the other end, in his dream, there was just an adult man crying and screaming and whimpering about fire in his building, in his office on the 77th floor, something along those lines, and just coughing and screaming to the little boy to send help from anywhere to help him. And then the man's voice was just naming himself and his fellow workers that were also trapped with him. And it just went on and on. And the little boy said, it sounded like the man couldn't hear what I was saying anyway. I told him there were no adults. I'm just a little boy. And the little boy was highly upset by remembering this dream and basically just said it made him very sad, and he hung up the phone. And the task force guy who recounted this story said he was very impacted by the fact that he could share something like this with a little 8-year-old boy. And when he was asked, what do you mean, you treated the little boy with respect and you treated him well. And the task force officer who interviewed the little boy said, no, what I meant was I had the same dream as the little boy.
Same dream. Wow.
Even though he was an adult. So it's not a phenomena that is relegated just to little kids.
There is that connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You've called yourself the new voice of the paranormal. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think I said a new voice. And what I meant by that is that one of the things that my studies, like you asked me about my conclusions from all the research that I've come across, and one of the great conclusions that I've come to, and this could be a little upsetting to some people, is that really a lot of the ideas in the paranormal haven't moved forward in the last, say, 50 years or so. I feel like a lot of the concepts that we have haven't really gone anywhere. You know, I greatly respect 1950s pilots. They did great service at the time that they were needed. But basically, I don't think we should still be using their language 50 years later. I don't think they're the ones who coined the term, for instance, UFOs. I think we should be coming up with new language for these things. I recognize the importance of being recognizable and using language that is immediately picked up in the cyber sphere and so forth. But really, terms like conspiracy theory are still being used 50 years later. UFO, Bigfoot, you know, we have alternative language, and I've seen a lot of effort to try to use new language, but it doesn't quite take. And I think we have to make greater efforts to create new language and to leave some of these terms behind. Terms that convey more neutrality than anything else, not really a lot of certainty. And that's really what I would like. That's really one of the great missions that I would like to help with, is to change the language of the paranormal, is to make something different that helps people to convey certitude, to convey certainty, knowledge that we know these things are true, not these not a lot of this vague, uncertain language like unidentified flying object. You know, it doesn't really mean a great deal to me. And I think we need to really update a lot of language in the paranormal and in supernatural areas in general.
Sure. You've said the para investigators could be men, women, children, people of all walks of life, right?
Yes, absolutely. They are. And para investigators sometimes are made even as teenagers, even as children, and they can be from anywhere. They can be civilians. They can anyone who is involved in a search for truth that somehow becomes something outside of the regular world. And I can tell you, even when I was a child, I came across certain situations that I couldn't accept the final word that, oh, this is not true, it's not real, just disregard it. It's not something that you need to concern yourself about. And there are majority of kids or people will just turn away from things that they're told not to pay attention to. But para-investigators tend to be people who have an urgent need to know, an urgent need to know what is really at the bottom of reality of what occurred.
How do you feel about people who try to debunk the things you do and other paranormal researchers?
You know, I feel like debunkery is really a myth. I feel like it's something that really isn't completely true, because for several reasons. One reason is that you cannot prove a negative. You can't prove that an entire class of phenomena is not true. It's just not. That's one of the first things they teach you in a good logic class, or even in law school. They teach you, you can prove a positive event. You can prove something happened, but you can't prove something never happened. There is no way in our physical universe to actually do that. That's one of the reasons why people are considered innocent until proven guilty, because a person can be proved to be guilty. It can be proved that, yes, they did that. But you can't really prove that something never happened. What's funny is that even when somebody very respected, like Houdini, would run around and prove psychics and seance people that they were frauds, he was very successful in that. He exposed a lot of frauds. But amazingly, what happens is that all he does is that he guarantees that those remaining in that profession are more likely to be genuine and real. Those who debunk a lot of particular incidents of paranormal phenomena, they tend to guarantee that those who stay in that phenomena, stay like psychics, for instance, will actually self-filter to a higher degree of truthfulness. And because once those frauds are gone, those that remain, they're going to actually be more likely to be genuine, not less likely. And that's also shown by the fact that paranormal topics, the popularity of paranormal only keeps going up.
Huge. Look at the programs like ours. I mean,
absolutely.
It keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
People have an ingrained sensibility, a need for spiritual truth. And I see paranormal topics as a sort of a hyper-spiritual area where people can actually satisfy their need for spiritual truth, and they can actually raise their own consciousness. And I've seen that in so many different areas. And I'm not talking about any particular area of the paranormal, but all the areas, they all give people satisfaction on a level that really is spiritual, the same, I mean, with just as much legitimacy as religious truth or other types of truth. Even though a lot of these people, they consider themselves very diverse. The people who believe in UFOs, mm-hmm. consider themselves very different from the people who believe in Bigfoot, or those who are ghost hunters. They see themselves as separate tribes, and they really shouldn't. They really shouldn't. They should. And one of the reasons for that is, for instance, people who believe in Bigfoot and cryptid creatures,
sure.
they tend to be outdoorsmen. They tend to be hunters, people who spend a lot of time. They tend to be a very hardy sort of crowd. UFO believers tend to be more people from urban-type background. They feel like they don't have a lot in common, but they do, because all these areas of paranormal are like a hyper-spirituality area that they get the same satisfaction.
What about abductees, John? Where do they fit in?
Abductees are just, they are fascinating. They are just fascinating people that sometimes need help. And it's just really sad that medical establishment type people don't help these people more when they need it. I mean, some people who are abductees have completely positive sort of white light experiences. Others have somewhat negative experiences. And I've interviewed several of those people, And it's very difficult because you really need some good medical background sometimes to really help these people. And very often they actually enjoy the special status that they feel they've gotten from alien visitors. So they tend to sometimes not want any help. And abductees are, they're believers, they're experiencers, and they're people who in particular need our support and our help in any way that we can give. Absolutely.
We're almost at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and take some phone calls for you. You are in some of your future works. Aren't you looking for people to send you stories?
Absolutely. At my website is John Tama Books.
You better spell that out for us.
John, common spelling, J-O-H-N, Tama, T like Tom, A like Apple, M like Mary, A like Apple, books.com. JohnTamaBooks.com. And my next book that's coming out is The Extra Dimensionals. It will be 52 stories of alien visitor experiences and those who contact them. Yeah, 52 true tales of concepts of alien visitors.
Well, you know, these stories abound. They're everywhere. There was that story of the little Israeli kid who told his parents that he was killed in another life. And they, went to the home with police of the person who apparently hit him in the head and killed him with an axe when he was an adult, but in a different life. And this kid found the axe that was buried, and the guy freaked out and admitted everything.
Wow. Yeah, but that's amazing. But the problem then becomes, how do you explain that to the judge during the evidence hearing, you know?
That's difficult.
when that defense attorney says, you know what, I want to have a hearing to suppress that axe. And the judge says, why? That defense attorney is going to say, well, because it came from the other world, otherworldly methods, from paranormal abilities. And it just depends on what the mood is that day to see what happens. And that's one of the reasons why officers are so paranoid about displaying their psychic abilities in the open.
Yeah.
It's because they need that legal structure. They have to obey that legal structure. And so if they do use their psychic abilities, they better cover it up with good language, developing the real world type suspicion that is needed in these types of cases.
All right, sit back for more conversation with you, John, and also phone calls. John D'Souza with us on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about the para investigators.